Heard about the new Nitto 555 G2 Ultra High Performance Tire? It's the next generation of the 555 you know, but steps up performance on every level. It's got better traction, handling, and wet braking. And if you haven't heard about it yet, you will.
Step up to the all-new Nitto 555 G2. Check it out at nittotire.com.
One warrior put it to me like this. He said, most of the world out there is sheep. They're kind, gentle creatures that can only hurt one another by accident. He says, then there are wolves. The wolves will feed on the sheep. They're the sociopaths. They're the criminals. He says, and then there are sheepdogs. The sheep are a little leery of the sheepdog. He wanders around and checks the perimeter every night and barks at the moon. He would never turn his teeth on the flock, but he yearns for a righteous battle. And when the wolf comes around, nothing else will do, and the entire flock is sitting there trying to hide behind one lonely sheepdog as he faces down the wolves. We're talking about a creature who is capable of confronting and dealing with combat and sustaining themselves across the long haul. The goal becomes to be a sheepdog, to be a warrior, to be the one that is ready to respond to the threats when the time arises.
Welcome to Blue Justice Radio. I'm your host, David. Blue Justice is brought to you by Lesma on Blog Talk Radio. Today we're going to be covering a topic that's very near and dear to me and to many others in law enforcement, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder. The signs, the symptoms, and the help. Now, post-traumatic stress disorder is something, obviously, that affects a lot of individuals in law enforcement, first responders, military, and is also very prevalent in the civilian population, but often overlooked. And hopefully those listening will pick up a little something today. It might just save yourself. It might save somebody you know. We're going to have a star-studded cast joining us today. We have Randy Sutton out of Vegas. He's going to be chiming in. And Eric Potts, I can't tell you where Eric Potts is, because Eric Potts is a traveling man and a great comedian. He's also a counselor for post-traumatic stress disorder and has had his own bouts with it, as did Randy Sutton and I myself at varying degrees amongst the three of us. No one is too strong to not be affected by this, and no one is untouchable from this tragic disorder. But there is hope, and there is ways around it, and there's ways of dealing with it, and coping with it, and moving on from it, and growing stronger from it. We have Amanda that's on the line, and we have several callers that are calling in, and one of them is already on. I hear an open mic in the background. Is that you, Amanda?
I'm on the line. Eric's there.
Oh, there you go. Eric's here, our traveling man. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Now, are you calling in from home? Are you going to be home for the holidays, or are you going to be busy on the road, sir?
I am home for the holidays, but I am working locally. I am doing a lot of shows locally over the holidays.
Okay. Well, at least you're going to be home. That's good.
Yeah.
And I following you on Facebook, I hear you had an enjoyable experience hanging out online for Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Some tool decided that he wasn't talking to me. He was talking to somebody else, but he was talking loud enough for everybody to hear him. He was just trashing cops, so I had to set him straight and let him know. He was really complaining that the cops, it takes no skill to be a cop, and it's, they retire young and they make so much money. And I let them know most police departments take a 2-year degree and a lot of them are requiring a 4-year degree. There's a lot of skill involved. And I said, the next time that you, that you need protection or something, call your chiropractor buddy. He'll protect you.
Exactly, exactly. You can call his Wall Street friend.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to get a lot of that. You know, it was funny. I remember, I know it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but, you know, for today's topic, but I do remember when I became a rookie cop, a bunch of guys I went to high school with were always like, oh, you know, let me buy this round. You're not making any money, whatever, whatever, whatever. And a lot of kids I went to school with went off, and they did just that. They went into the Wall Street type field. They went into investing and banking. You know, when the market crashed, I just so happened, I was at the academy one day for training, and I'm already many, many years on, and there's these two rookies in the gym. And I'm looking at them from the overhang, from a distance, and I'm like, wow, these guys look familiar. And I go downstairs, and sure enough, it's two of the assholes I went to high school with. Who were those assholes who would say, let me buy the drinks? They lost their jobs. They'd, you know, partied every dollar they had, and here they are going into the same job they used to talk shit about.
Exactly.
It's funny. But listen, back on to what today's topic is. I appreciate you calling in and being a part of it. I truly respect everything you've been through and your passion about this topic, the post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, it's very big subject for me. I know it is for you, and it's just really, you have no idea what it means to me to be able to have this moment on TV, on the radio with you and to discuss this with you. Thank you very much.
Of course, it's my pleasure, and yeah, anything that I can do to educate and get this topic out there in the forefront, especially for law enforcement. But, you know, anything you talk about when you deal with anything with post-traumatic stress disorder or stress-related or depression or suicide, you know, we're gearing this towards police officers, but anybody who's listening that knows somebody who's not even in law enforcement really should have somebody listen to this. If they're not listening live, listen to the recording of it, because it's important for anybody. This information goes for anybody, really.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. You know, and that's kind of, I made it a big, you know, I made it a big thing when I aired it, and I announced I was going to do it, and in planning to do this show and discussing it with, you know, the normal crew that does the radio show with me, you know, I think there is a lot that's overlooked from the civilian, for the civilian side. You know, they just don't seem to get it, and it's funny because it's very prevalent now, because you know people are dealing with it and don't realize it. In San Bernardino and in Paris, you know, from seeing this, it's kind of weird how, like, as first responders, we deal with it, we know what it is, and usually we can detect it ourselves. We just choose to ignore it and need someone else to point it out. From the civilian side, sometimes they don't even know what it is that they're going through, and you know, they almost seem totally uneducated about it.
Well, I think that for law enforcement, I think the tides are changing just a little bit. I think that there's a little bit more education for law enforcement out there on this subject. I don't think there's as much help as there needs to be, but I think there's education. And you're right, the civilian world, they see something, they're involved in a traumatic incident. And I think you even talked about it where somebody just involved even in something as simple as a minor motor vehicle accident can suffer from PTSD. And so when you have the civilian population who's being exposed to this and not knowing, not recognizing, and not knowing what's going on in their lives. Again, we're benefiting from this right here by talking about it, and we're benefiting from the fact that we are educated. I think they're even doing it in the police academies now. They might be talking about it. I know they didn't when I was in. I'm sure they didn't when you were in, but I think they are now.
I remember the days. I'm sure it had to be the same for you. When I was in, it was still the days of, oh, you have a problem? You got to see the shrink.
Yeah.
Oh, and give me a gun and shield.
Yeah, and or it was, you know, suck it up, buttercup, and get out there and do the job. There's nothing wrong with you.
Oh, absolutely. It's in your head. You'll get over it.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, absolutely it is. It was a shame that they took that route, but, yeah, that was what it was the whole time. Don't ask for help. And the second you do ask for help, by the way, we're going to screw you over. We're going to shaft you one way or the other. You're going to lose your gun or your shield or your position, or you're going to get transferred, and it is what it is. But, you know.
Or you're not going to ever see a promotion.
Oh, absolutely. Well, they hold that over everybody for everything. You know, that's just sickening in and of itself. But, you know, I really, you know, I guess, you know, a big factor of it is, too, is you brought it up the last time we spoke, is I think it's that type A personality. We're too fucking macho as first responders. You know, the civilians being civilians, they're more sensitive. They're more into that. They're more touchy-feely. You know, I mean, I even see it in the group with the way they post shit. So they're more accepting to the fact of, oh, gee, there's something wrong, and I need to get help. But they don't always seem to know what it is they need help for, which I think is kind of like, you know, it's kind of weird. The cops, you know, it's definitely, I still think it's a stigma. Not the younger kids. The younger kids definitely seem to be more, I don't know. The younger kids on the job, I just find them to be completely messed up nowadays.
Well, you know what it is?
It's
the same thing as you know, we talked about this last time. There is a stigma. There's an old school thinking within police departments. I think as time goes by and the old school thinking starts to retire and starts to fade out, you're going to have a police department that's going to recognize these incidents. I don't think you're ever going to change the type of personality that comes into police work. And we see at times, and I don't want to really, you know, go far into this, but we see at times that some of these personalities that are not so good slip through. But the majority of personalities that come through or come on the police department are definitely alpha male personalities. They have to be. You have to be an alpha male to do this job. And I don't mean, when I say male, I also mean female. An alpha personality is what I should say. You have to be an alpha personality to do this job, to do it in any way effectively. That doesn't mean you have to go and be an asshole to everybody. That means that you have to be able to take command. You have to show that command presence. But with that comes the fact, cannot show, especially in our environment, can't show weakness. And so if you have an issue when you're suffering from PTSD or anything like that, people, especially in law enforcement, I would even probably say firefighters and EMT too. Now, I don't know, but I can tell you that I know firefighters that absolutely suffer this, and I've counseled them. But it is such a stigma to have an issue and to bring it forward that a lot of the times, especially old school, you'll be relentlessly made fun of because that's what we do. And we're assholes to each other all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, we love each other.
Listen, you're 100% right. And it's beautiful to hear someone else say it, but that's exactly what it is. We actually, we are some of the biggest assholes we know in the way that we treat others.
Yeah, therein lies the issue. There needs to be education within the police departments on PTSD, on depression, on suicide prevention. There needs to be that education in police departments. I think that the tides are changing a bit. I think that you doing these shows are tremendous help to get the word out there you know, this is a serious issue. And like you said, you know, these officers in San Bernardino, the officers for any school shootings or anything like that, excuse me, are definitely – some people are able to take these stressors and just roll with them, and it never bothers them. And God bless them. That's great. But if you're one or two officers that are going to these calls and you're seeing this, and you may have seen it, you may be working in New York City where you're seeing tragedy, you know, every hour, and it does nothing bothers. Then the 17th time that you go see something clicks in you, and it's just, you know, it's a scene that reminds you of something else. And then you're in it, you're in the shit. You can't figure a way to claw out of it, and it just gets worse and worse. And that's why doing these type of shows, and especially around the holidays, which is brilliant, doing these types of shows and getting the word out there and talking to people and letting them know that, hey, you're not alone and there's nothing wrong with you. You're feeling what you're feeling is normal. It's not abnormal. And so to make people clear that it's okay to have these feelings. It's okay to actually sympathize with somebody or to feel that way. And reliving the scene is not abnormal, because it's something that many people go through. You just need to get help to help you not obsess over the incident, because that's where it really gets bad, when you start obsessing over the incident.
Absolutely. And you know, that was a big part of why I wanted to why I figured to do it on the holidays is, you know, I do know a lot of times people, like you said, they can do things hundreds of times, it never bothers them. And then there's just that one time, it's one too many. You know, it's a lot to do with their own personal, their own personality. But I do know, you know, like me, myself, anniversaries are tough. You know, I worked through September 11th without a hiccup. You know, but it was the next year thinking about it on the 1 year anniversary where, you know, you started picking up certain things, you know, or I did about me. You know, I can't handle, you know, and I live in an area where the airplanes circle, we're in a flight path, a circling path. I can't stand it when they circle over the house low and they cut their motors, and I'm hearing the motors go and then they just shut off, and I panic. I cannot handle it. I cannot handle, believe it or not, being in a busy area, you know, where I worked. It was very big, you know, in Astoria or on Steinway Street. I had a hard time going into businesses and being surrounded by people speaking Arabic and in traditional Muslim garb. And I know it's stupid. I know it actually had nothing to do with 9/11, but my brain was making a connection. And
right.
I didn't even pick up on it right away. You know, so there were certain things that, again, I don't have a fear of flying, but I notice when I do fly, I single out passengers to me that look traditionally Muslim and Islamic. And I get very, very nervous around them. I keep tabs on them. I watch them. You know, it's my own little thing, and at least that's all it is. I know some people have stuff a lot worse.
I would say that you know, while that may be you're perceiving that as an extreme, I think that in law enforcement in general, we all do that. I mean, you know that you go into a restaurant, you sit with your back at the furthest corner so you can see the door, your back to the wall, you're always looking, you're always watching. And, you know, people say it's profiling. Well, it's not racial profiling, it's criminally profiling. I'm watching people who I believe are, you know, can do certain things or would do certain things. And in a plane, we're conditioned to believe that we know for a fact because of 9/11, you know, it was Islamic and Muslims and Arabic people who did these heinous crimes. And so, what do you do as a police officer, law enforcement? You're diligent. You're being the sheepdog, and you're protecting.
I get that. I am. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's not an extreme. You're right. It is definitely my extreme.
No, I'm not saying it's not extreme. I'm saying the behavior is a normal behavior for a police officer, even a retired police officer. But when you are obsessing over it, is when it becomes the issue. And I think that's where you're going towards the obsession portion of it.
Oh no, definitely. It definitely. No, well, I've gotten better. I have gotten better, actually. You know. But yeah, I have my own, some things I can't. Yeah, September 11th, starting a week out, I'm an emotional mess. I'm all tears. I can't function, you know, breakdowns and everything, thinking about people I lost, kids I went to high school with, that civilians, cops I knew, plenty of firefighters I knew. You know, I did not like the idea that I put in an easy 100 funerals due to that, people that were lost, you know, people in service and civilians.
I gotta cut in and let you guys know that Randy Sutton is on the air too. He's on the line.
Good morning.
Beautiful Randy. Jump on in. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Doing great in sunny Las Vegas. Thank you.
Yeah, early in the morning in sunny Las Vegas, and I apologize for that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Thank you for joining me. We have, I was just talking to, and I'm sure you were able to hear, we have Eric Potts on the phone with us as well. And,
morning, Eric.
Hi, Randy. How are you?
Great.
So you two are... Oh, go ahead.
We, I don't know if you heard, but we had a police officer shot here yesterday.
Yes,
and,
I did hear, and it's... thank God they caught that son of a bitch. I know it took a couple of hours, but Thank God. How's that office going to be? What's the update?
State is he and his partner were at a domestic dispute in a apartment complex, and they separated. The one officer who was shot was walking down to the office to get some information. And he confronted this guy who had nothing to do with the domestic. And apparently this guy, who didn't even have much of a criminal record, just opened fire on the police officer. And one of the bullets went under the side panel of the vest in the armpit area and did quite a bit of damage. Luckily, the officer was able to return fire, and the suspect fled, and they caught him about 5 hours later. Still unknown. The motive is not known. And the officer, luckily, 21-year patrol veteran, is going to be okay. He's got a little hospital stay, but he's going to be okay. But it really underscores some of what this discussion is about. When you talk about it, really opened the same wounds of losing our two guys, that were assassinated a year ago. And so the community also, can reflect on certain aspects of post-traumatic stress disorder as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry, I know you're out there and I know you love the guys and you know a lot of guys on the job still. I'm sorry that had happened. I'm sorry that it happened the day before we did this show. 2 days ago, I had lost somebody I know through one of these LEO groups. Don't know him very well. I just know him through lots of communication in the group, and he had taken his life and left no warning to anyone. A very, very good acquaintance of mine. I mean, I never met him face to face. I guess I can't call him a friend, but I still call him a brother. He worked the job.
I have a feeling I know who you're talking about in California, correct?
Yeah.
Well, this is going to shock you, but I know him as well, also through Facebook, and he sent me a suicide note.
Oh, that sucks.
And when I got it, the only information I had was he lives in Los Angeles, and so I contacted the LAPD to tell them, about this situation, and they did their best to find him, and they were unable to. And then a couple of days later is when I understood that he was discovered. So, he was, this, it gets personal, man. It gets very personal when these things happen.
Absolutely. Even just to highlight, for civilians listening, and I know we have several on the line that are listening in and may want to ask you guys questions, and I don't know about you guys. I guess I'm asking more so for your opinion, because I know how I feel. I don't know if I necessarily am feeling right about this, if I should be feeling this way. But, I hear about these officers committing suicide, getting killed in the line of duty. It could be somebody I didn't even know, and I'm an emotional mess. It actually really, it fucks me up. I mean, truthfully, I feel that kinship to them, just not even knowing them, just, taking that same oath, putting on that same badge, doing that same job. There's a kinship there. It really does have an effect. It's not something that's spoken about. I know all the years I worked on the job, you never really even spoke to your partner about that. You heard about somebody dying. It was a cop somewhere else in the city. You felt a little upset, but you never actually really sat down and broke it down. How does that stuff affect the two of you when you hear it? I mean, do you guys have the same type of feelings, or is this just me?
Well, it's funny you should say it. Yesterday, during the – I'm a contributor to a local television station here. And I was on the set for 5 hours during the manhunt for this suspect in the officer-involved shooting. And during this thing, I, too, found myself becoming emotionally involved in it. And, you know, one of the questions that they asked was, they talked about, the reporters were talking about the killing of the two officers earlier this or last year. And it did. Those emotions welled up, and I actually felt tears. And, you know, as police officers, we always are the stoic ones. We are always the ones who never show that we are upset or emotion or anything like that. We cannot, because we have to be those pillars of strength. But I believe that we all have an emotional cup that, once it's too full, it begins overflowing. And that's when I realized that I could no longer really be effective any longer, because my emotional cup was just too high, and I found myself at the latter part of my career really not being able to hold it together sometimes when there was really tremendous sadness.
On the same token, when you were talking about when you were on the job and you had other friends, you know, you wouldn't even talk to your friends about it. You would see a cop being killed somewhere else, and you'd get that, oh, geez, you know, I feel bad for my bro, but you keep doing your job. That's because, as Randy said, we have this stoic personality that we have to maintain, and especially when you're on the job, you have to maintain that, and you can't show that weakness to anybody. And I think when you retire and you become a little bit removed from that, and you start to become you become a human again, and for lack of a better word, because that's really what happens to us, we become humanized again. We start to feel those feelings and get those emotions that we wouldn't be able to display normally every day when we were on the job. And so, I think it's all natural. I think that we might feel it a little bit more, obviously, because we were in it. We were in the job. We know, you know, how a police officer thinks and how he feels and how he responds. And we know how we feel. And I think as now as retired police officers that we definitely feel it a lot more than we did when we were on the job. And that's not to say we're uncaring on the job. That's to say that we suppress those feelings on the job.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, but it's very interesting. I get private messages from all my blogging and writing. I'm going to guess 400 or 500 a month from different police officers, and many of these officers are asking about the normalcy of their feelings. And one of the things that was really pointed out very dramatically when I wrote my book, A Cop's Life, and it was all stories from my own career, and it's kind of a dark book. I mean, it talks about some pretty heavy stuff. And I started getting messages from cops from all over the country thanking me for writing it, but not in the way that I had anticipated. I had, I'm going to guess, since I wrote that book, at least 20 police officers contacted me and said that they were going to commit suicide. They had planned on committing suicide. And then they read my book and they realized something very important, that they were not alone in their feelings. And I think that is the crux of the real issue when you talk about not communicating. They felt that they were alone. They were confronting these tremendous feelings that they had from all the sadness and the tragedy and the violence, all the things that police officers see every day. And they felt that they must be weak or there must be something wrong with them because they were confronted with these feelings and it was affecting them. And so they thought they were alone. And that's, unfortunately, I think, one of the issues that if we're going to really confront the PTSD problem in law enforcement, we need to normalize it. We need to tell those that are serving that it's normal to feel emotion when you are confronted day after day, year after year, with sadness and trauma.
Hey, Randy, Eric, David, Tammy's asking a question in the chat room that I wanted to throw out to you guys. And then we do have callers on the line that I want to put through. But Tammy's question is, how do you help someone that won't help themselves even when they know that they do need it?
That's the $64,000 question right there. The only thing that you can do is show the support and try to and try your very best to get people to talk to others who are their peers. The peer activity that that gets involved in these discussions is really the most effective. And if it becomes to a critical mass, then it may sound difficult to do, but to contact someone who is close to that officer that is also on the job may be the best bet.
Yeah, as I said before, because we did this show once before, when you have somebody who is in the throes of depression, you're concerned that they may harm themselves, the worst thing you can do is remain silent. You have to ask that person. And if you don't feel comfortable doing it, find somebody who's comfortable doing it and say, are you thinking about harming yourself? Because, you know, the myth is that if you ask somebody if they're thinking about killing themselves, that's going to push them over the edge and they're going to do it. And that's the wrong thing. What that does is that helps release some of the stress. It opens up the line of communications. If you directly ask somebody, are you thinking about harming yourself? So if you have somebody who's feeling that way or feeling depressed, that's the first thing you should do is make sure that they're not going to harm themselves. And then you go through the channels. If it's to law enforcement, hopefully the police department has contact numbers and stuff for people and counselors and the private counselors that they can get in there and talk to them. If not, at least get the supervisor aware of what's going on. That's not ratting out on somebody. That's helping somebody. Get somebody involved who's going to be able to take you to the next step. If it's a civilian person, obviously there's helplines out there, and you can if worse comes to worst, the emergency room, because they can get you in touch with people who are going to get you immediate care.
And I would also just throw out there, just, you know, for everyone listening, and I had it happen the other night. You know, Amanda's aware of it, and a couple of our group members made me aware, civilian group members made me aware of it. We had an officer who was really on the edge and has a lot going on, health issues, family issues, job issues, and they made the connection between us. I'm available, and I'm not a counselor. I can offer you nothing but an ear to talk to, someone you can bitch at, scream at me. You know, if you're local, I'll meet with you. You can pound on my chest until you feel better, whatever it is. But at the same time, too, I have made many connections with people, counselors, therapists, that will talk to you, that will help you, that I can refer you to. I have several within the country. They may not be in your state. You know, they're people I've spoken to through that wonderful app, LinkedIn, that do work with departments that I can put you in touch with. That are willing to do it and keep it anonymous. Get the help you need and find out what's going on before, you know, we decide whether or not we have to, you know, notify someone. But the only thing I could say is, I mean, and Randy and Eric are the experts here, but the only thing I could say is, yeah, you know, reach out to somebody, whether you yourself are going through it or someone else is, reach out to somebody and take a breath before you do anything. That's it. Just take a breather, and things will look a lot different once you take that breather. Everything's not as dark as it seems.
Are we ready to get to the callers? Do you want to, maybe they have something to ask along these lines. Are we ready?
I mean, yeah, ask our two guests. They're the experts. Are you guys ready to take a few calls for our followers?
Yeah. Sure, absolutely.
Okay, all right, so
first one,
Amanda, just announce them and bring them on.
Okay, the first one is Yvonne, and Yvonne, you're live.
Hi, everybody.
Hi,
Yvonne. Hello,
Yvonne.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to call in because I have a lot of friends and acquaintances, and also my brother's in law enforcement. One thing that I see is that in men, typically, they tend to mask everything, pretend everything's okay. And what scares me most is when they say everything is okay and do pretend, because normally those are the ones that end up committing suicide. All too often, I think we hear of, you know, I never noticed any indicators. I would have never thought he was so happy. Everything in his life looked awesome. So that's what concerns me when the actual officer shuts everybody down. It can be manifested through anger, through distancing themselves. There's so many ways. And I just think that we should be aware of all the symptoms. So as civilians, we're able to help them. I give them their space, but at the same time, I second. So it's kind of like between a rock and a hard place. You know, I don't want to push, but I also want to be there.
You've hit a very very topical. It's very difficult for someone on the outside to understand the emotions that an officer is going through. But when it comes down to becoming a critical problem, there's usually some symptoms or some outward signs. There's sometimes it's visible depression. Sometimes it is really jumping on the bottle a lot. We've also seen a great deal of misuse of painkillers. So sometimes the symptoms are a little more obvious. Shutting down, not being communicative. But really, it's the change in behavior that you can observe if you are close to someone. That change in behavior is a strong indicator.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Yvonne.
Oh, go ahead. No, it's okay. I was just saying that I totally agree, and that's a good thing that it's being said out to everybody, because sometimes they miss that. Sometimes they think, oh, he was just having a hard day or she was having a hard day. It's okay. And they go on to dismiss little changes like that that become more chronic as time passes by.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Most people who commit suicide, believe it or not, at some point, especially just before the act, give some sort of indicator to somebody, whether it's even a subtle verbal sign that, you know, I my life's not worth it anymore. This is just I just want to end it all. Even something as dramatic as that, or suddenly somebody makes a will that they didn't have before, or suddenly and their behaviors leading up to this, or they seem preoccupied with death or dying or any of those things. There's some sort of indicator that is given out that you're right, people aren't picking up on. And this is where programs like this help educate people, law enforcement officers, loved ones of family members of law enforcement officers, and just the general public in general. There's absolute signs. There's absolute changes in behavior that happen to most people. You know, there's certainly somebody out there who's just all of a sudden may not have any outward signs, but I'm saying most cases there are outward signs that definitely should lead to concern and should lead to getting immediate help.
And then just one more thing I'd like to say before I get off, that you know, there's a difference between acute stress and PTSD, obviously. When people undergo a traumatic, I know as officers they complain, oh, we have to, you know, it's mandated to see a psychologist. What they don't know is that can make a major difference, whether it transpires to PTSD or it's more controlled with seeking professional help, or just venting with your peers, or coming home and venting in some manner and occupying yourself.
Well, critical incident stress management is something that needs to be in place in every police department, and it needs to be implemented whenever an officer is at a prolonged life-saving event or some traumatic event. And I remember last time that we had this discussion, David, that we had somebody came on here and said, you know what, we're not going to go talk to anybody. You can't make us go. Well, you know what, you don't have to talk, but you can be made to go. And if you sit at critical incident stress management and you have a group of people who are debriefing you on what's going on, you may hear other people say something that triggers in you, oh, yeah, I felt that same way emotionally. And that's why it's important to have that. You don't have to talk. but it may trigger you to talk when you go to this incident. You see that other people are feeling the exact same way you're feeling. And, you know, it's not – there's no stigma with it because you're mandated to go. And it's a group therapy where you – and then you are able to – if you have those issues, you're able to go and talk to somebody privately afterwards. But I think the critical incident stress management is very important in law enforcement, for firefighters, for EMS, and for dispatchers, that they really need to have these things in place, and it needs to be nationwide. Even in the smallest departments need to have it. And it's free. Costs you nothing to have a critical incident stress management other than the training of the personnel. So what you said, Yvonne, is absolutely correct. You need to speak to somebody or at least listen in to other people that are feeling the same way you're feeling.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you for identifying certain things so that others can be aware of it more.
Thank you for calling, Yvonne.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, thank you, Yvonne. Have a good day.
Okay, next caller is Karen. Karen, are you on?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, good deal. Well, I just wanted to thank y'all so much for having this show. You know, it as a supporter who I do have a few of the invisible illnesses, and once I found out, just in learning the severity of it, it's just something I take very seriously personally, and just also trying to learn more. But what was shocking to me is I read somewhere where one out of three people have some form of invisible, whether it's anxiety or depression, PTSD, and, just the fact that there's still a stigma around it. And so I'm really, really, I really appreciate you all, doing these shows and really helping out,
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I wanted to, while we're on this topic, I think there's a book that I recommend every single police officer read. It was written by Dr. Kevin Gilmartin, who was a Tucson police officer who, while he was on the job, got his psychologist degree. And he wrote a book called Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement. And I not only read the book, but I have attended many of his lectures. He's one of the not only experts but a very entertaining speaker on a topic that's so vitally important. And this book, it's very short; it's maybe 130 pages, is a real life read, and it's easy to read, and it really explains why and how police officers can guard themselves from PTSD and from other, other traumas, and it explains how there are physiological issues also that are at play when it comes to a prolonged law enforcement career. And this is truly one of those books that I believe every police officer should get at the beginning of their career and read it as their career. As their career moves on, because it's something that can really help in a self-help kind of way to recognize and to combat a lot of the issues that are facing law enforcement officers.
Randy, I used to before I retired, I had a program in the police department where when we got new guys coming out of the academy, we made them attend a session with their family in which I discussed the changes that were going to happen to them in law enforcement, because it's inevitable that people change when they come into law enforcement, your personality changes and stuff. And I gave two books out. One of them was that book. And the other one was for the family members, I Love a Cop. And so
they
would have those books. They would be able to read them and reference them and stuff. And you're right. It's so important to educate at the beginning. And I think it should be academy issue. You give this book out in the academy and go, hey, this is part of your curriculum. You have to read this book.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the jobs that I had when I was with Las Vegas Metro was I was in charge of advanced training. And I was able to talk my bosses into need to spend quite a bit of money to bring Dr. Gilmartin in to train every single police officer on our agency. And which were the ninth largest police department in the country. So it was an expensive proposition, but it also was very, very effective, I believe, in countering some of the issues that that we're facing now.
Yeah, and it's awesome to see that somebody in a position, an administrative position, is recognizing that and bringing that into play, because oftentimes in the administrators, they're older police officers who have that dinosaur mentality that needs to be changed within law enforcement, and where, you know, suck it up, buttercup, and go out there and work.
Yeah.
And that's not always the way it works.
That's for sure.
Let me ask you guys. I heard you mentioning books and what was done within the departments. The NYPD, when we went in, they didn't have any sort of program. You didn't get books, you didn't get anything. It was more or less a screw you, whatever. But what they did offer was, and I don't know how good it was, they offered a family day. And they wanted you to bring in your family, and the instructors would sit with them separate from you, and try to give them an idea on what was going on. I don't know if it's necessarily a better idea.
Just make sure it's not that quick.
I'm sorry. I'm hearing background noise. I apologize to everyone. I don't know where it's coming from, What's your take on that? I mean, I always thought, you know, it was a good idea because the instructors would tell them, listen, this is what you got to expect. They are going to change, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is it's someone talking to them for 10 minutes. There was nothing given to them as saying, you know, this is some good literature. This is something you should read. This is something you should think about. You know,
well, it sounds to me like it was a half-assed kind of approach. You know, either give the information in a way that people can absorb it, or don't give a pamphlet out to somebody. You know, that's almost insulting.
That's putting a Band-Aid on it. That's all that is.
I wondered, because part of me thought, well, maybe it's a good idea because they're hearing it from somebody who's got time on, but at the same time, that's what you're getting. You're getting that half-hour thing, and then it's like, okay, let's go outside and play in the helicopter. And we'll forget about it and make everything hunky-dory. So I wanted, you know, again, with the expertise you guys actually have in it, you know, I wanted to get your opinion. Because from what I understand, we've built a multi-million-dollar over-budget brand-new academy in the city, and that's still their way of handling it. It's fucking family day. And, you know, I see the pictures online whenever there's a new recruit that, you know, on LEO only or whatever, they'll post it. It's a beautiful academy. But you wonder what is really gained out of it. I appreciate your opinion. I really do. And I'm going to let them know that these kids, when they go in, and I'm going to make note of these books too, and send it out to these kids, cause it should be known. I really do appreciate your opinion though. And I'm not surprised that the NYPD is doing something half-assed. So thank you for your honesty in that. I do appreciate it.
Well, I just read a story today on police1.com about an officer-involved shooting that took place in a very small town. In fact, this is the first officer-involved shooting in the history of this town. And three or four police officers fired at a guy who opened up on them with a shotgun, and they killed him. And I was really impressed with the small town police chief who said, you know, taking the life of another human being is traumatic for a police officer, and we're going to give them as much time as necessary to get it together. We're going to offer our counseling. We're going to get them professional help and peers, and they'll come back when they feel that it's okay for them to come back. So I was very impressed with the fact that we're even in small towns now, they're at least confronting the knowledge that these officer-involved shootings and other traumatic events can play a real role in the future of their police officers, and to give them the opportunity to go to the counseling that they feel they should go to.
Oh, absolutely. That's phenomenal to hear. Wow, to imagine anybody would be like, yeah, they'll just take the time they need and they'll come back when they're ready.
you know, it's refreshing. I'm so used to hearing the screw you, you'll sit here for the rest of your life and do nothing anymore, or the hurry up and get back out there, we need you on the street. It's really refreshing to see that kind of a change.
Were there some other callers that wanted to ask some questions?
Amanda?
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. Yeah, you guys do have one more caller. This person, I believe, suffers from PTSD. So we call her McPherson. And you are live.
Hey,
how you doing?
Thanks for this. I'm good. Thank you. How are you guys all doing? Well, I hope.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the show. This is great. The last time you guys did it, it really actually helped me. I was getting really, it was right after the bombings in Paris, and I started getting really paranoid and weirded out the day that you guys broadcast that, and I started listening to it, and it really calmed me down.
So good. I'm glad we were able to help.
And I'm calling, I don't have questions. I wanted to say something about some things that were said earlier. You had mentioned the anniversaries, and I have problems with anniversaries too. And a person told me also who has PTSD, he said what he does, and I started doing it this year. On the anniversary days, he has developed rituals or traditions for himself that he focuses on. So instead of the day being about what had happened and the memories of that day, it's about this new thing that he does on that day. That makes sense. So that's one way of dealing with the anniversary, is to create your own new anniversary.
True. I could see how that would be beneficial.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my day, for me, my worst day was going through what I saw on 9/11, and obviously on every anniversary, all you hear is about what happened on 9/11, and it's understandable, but it does make it difficult.
I didn't think of that, that you're surrounded, you're submerged in the information about the day. That's rough.
Yeah, it, you know, every news channel, every radio broadcast, you know, and maybe it's me just trying to be a little brave still, that I say, the hell with it, I'll deal with it. But it does have its emotional toll on me, and I do often afterwards feel very well spent from it all. But I do like the idea. I do. You know, the idea of trying to replace it. You know, it's no different. I used to smoke. It's the same way I stopped smoking. I quit cold turkey, and every time I had an urge for a cigarette, I'd pop a piece of gum in my mouth. And believe me, it was hard, but you know, eventually it took, and there you go. So, I mean, the idea of mentally replacing, you know, that fixation with something else is clearly possible.
Yeah.
What are you guys?
Yeah.
But now, what are you guys think, Eric and Randy? I mean, you know, as far as, at least in layman terms, to help someone get over it, I mean, what do you think of the approach of just more or less swapping out what it is that's triggering it and avoiding it by, you know, replacing it with something else, like she said, replacing your normal tradition that would trigger it with a new event?
Well, I think it's a good idea to help distract you from it, but you can't ignore the underlying thing. That's just covering up with a little bit of paint. You're ignoring what's going on. If you're not speaking with somebody professionally, which I'm a true firm believer in, if you're having some serious issues and an incident is causing you serious problems as far as, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder, one way of coping with this is a great way of coping with it is to avoid the triggers. But if you're not addressing the underlying issue and you're not speaking with somebody, you're really not doing yourself any good or any justice. You need to address it. Not only find other ways of not triggering those memories, but address the actual situation and speak with somebody who can help you, who can educate you even more on what it is you're suffering from, and to help you possibly move past this thing and not feel all the issues that you're feeling. I don't think it'll ever go away for anybody, any traumatic incident, but you certainly can be held to cope with it a lot better.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other avenue here is to understand that reacting to traumatic incidents is very personal. Everyone deals with these things differently, and that there are also avenues of growth that can result out of traumatic incidents. I wrote one of the books that I wrote was called The Power of Legacy, and one of the things that I found was that people who had gone through serious traumas, physical and emotional, many of the people that have made tremendous accomplishments in this country and in the world did so because they were traumatized in such dramatic ways. So there's other avenues here from being subjected to trauma that don't have to be negative, that can turn out to be positive.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, no, I do too. Absolutely.
I've found... Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my phone is a little janky. I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I've been transformed as a human being. I'm no longer the person that I was before. And now that I'm healing, I do EMDR and acupuncture. And as I've healed, I've noticed that some of the changes that have occurred are very positive. I am far more empathic towards other people. I understand other people's pain much better than I did before. And I have another capabilities that I have now that I didn't have before, physiological and mental capabilities. And I really appreciate that. I mean, I don't appreciate the suffering I've gone through, but I do appreciate some of the gifts that I've received behind it.
Can I chime in on that, too? Do you also experience, like, sometimes you get that gut feeling that somebody may be struggling and you reach out to them privately and just kind of tell your story and just to kind of open the door for them to see somebody, you know, a professional counselor to help, reach out to others to help them? Because sometimes, I'll see a post on Facebook that just, I don't know, it's that gut feeling that, hey, I felt that same way before. Let me reach out to them. Yeah, because, when I do, I really kind of go in detail with my friends and, that I reach out to privately and, even just kind of preparing them for that first visit to, a professional counselor or a doctor and just saying, hey, because this is what friends did for me whenever I experienced my time a few years ago it was in 2007. They just knew something wasn't right with me. And the two friends that also, have the PTSD and they have the anxiety and depression, they really helped prepare me for that first appointment because me, I thought, oh, yeah, time, it'll just pass. Everybody goes through these things. But they knew it was a little bit deeper. So, big tips were, write down notes, let it go in your appointment, just they've got to see everything, and also if you're put on the medication, due to the severity of it, give it time. Don't give up, trust in the doctor.
With the medication, I'm glad that you brought that up, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to say that I went through, before I started doing EMDR and acupuncture, I did talk therapy and I did medications. And medications were disastrous for me. It was absolutely a disaster. And part of the problem was because I was dealing with physicians who were not trauma specialists. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And they ended up, basically, I consider it medical abuse. So I would say that anybody who's going through PTSD and dealing with trauma, find people who know what they're doing and have training in trauma. Because there's so much, psychology is a huge discipline, and many people who are practicing psychologists, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground when it comes to trauma. And they can damage you. Anyway, that's just all I wanted to say. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Well, you know, listen, in regards to that, the reality is, you know, and I can tell you as someone who has a spouse who's a physician, it's not their cup of tea. They don't do it. To a certain point, you're right. If you walk into an ER for help, the doctor will help as best as he can, but the reality is you have to follow up with the appropriate people. If it's a psych issue, mm-hmm. you have to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And a psychiatrist, you have to remember, is someone who goes to medical school. A psychologist is someone who went to college. Then they ended. They got their psych degree and they're working, they're doing counseling work or whatever. A lot of times the right way to go may be to go with the psychiatrist. Some people have mm-hmm. a stigma with that and they're like, oh, if I go to a psychiatrist, I'm crazy. If I go to a counselor, I just need help. You need help. You're not crazy. You need help. That's what it is. That's, mm-hmm. And I'm saying it as somebody who to some degree suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. You need help. You have to get out there. So first thing is don't let stigmas bother you. And understand, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I always say, and my wife always says it, and I guess I picked it up from her, and it always gets me a little bent out of shape, but I do understand where it comes from. People say, oh, the doctors, they're doing the best they can. You know, my wife, she runs a pediatric ward at a hospital. You know, just 2 days ago, she came home because they lost the kid. The kid died. The first thing the parents say is, oh, my God, what did you do? Which was funny because the week before when they brought the kid in and the kid was almost dead and they got the kid back, it was, oh, my God, thank God. Wait a second. You're thanking a person you've never seen. You can't realistically prove. You're balancing on faith, and I'm Catholic, I do believe, but I'm just saying, you're balancing on faith to the fact that they may agree, that they may not exist, and you're blaming this potential mythical creature or person for saving your child, but then when the person goes, it's the doctor's fault. There is no thank you, doctor, for saving my kid. It is a little thankless, but they are doing the best they can, and sometimes, you know, like you said, oh, they don't know what they're doing. What they're doing on you may not work on you for other reasons, but may work on me. But what's working on me may not work on you. The medications, due to physiological differences between you and I as individuals, may affect me differently than they affect you. So they may be productive on me, but non-productive on you. And it is easier to blame a person because the reality is, I mean, when you're dealing with emotions and psychology, it's not easy. There is no straight answer at all. It's like quitting any habit with me with smoking. I quit cold turkey. You know, how many people can't quit with the patch? You know, so there is a big difference between it. So we got to kind of keep that involved. I don't think any physician is malicious in their mistreatment of an individual for any reason. But, you know, I think we as people have to understand there are underlying issues that may affect that treatment, you know, our physiological makeup, our environmental, or I should say the impacts of the environment actually has a big dealing in, especially in psychological issues. You know, if you're dealing with something post-traumatic, let's say with domestic violence, but you're still in the marriage, how is that doctor, therapist, psychologist, or counselor actually going to be able to help you when you're still in marriage, if that's what the real problem is? So, I mean, I just before we jump to the gun to say, you know, a physician isn't doing their job, I would just ask, you know, keep in mind there are other factors that may affect them being able to help. You know, certainly it's at least an idea we should kick around.
Yeah, especially with the, you know, seeing a psychiatrist, you know, I personally, with the medications, I can say, you know, it's not a quick fix, but it helps. You know, I mean, it took probably 3 months for the medication to kick in, but it did. you know, and it's just it's an ongoing thing that, you know, you've always got to be aware of, and it's important to go to those follow-ups, and, you know, and again, just if you need to, take notes of just different behavior changes so they know, so they can really pinpoint to get you right on the back track, you know, right on track, and then, you know, and then, you know, eventually, like where I'm going in now is, you know, finding the steps to go into a counseling and finding a counselor as well, just, you know, to stay healthy. But it's not a quick fix, but there is light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
Now, and again, I apologize. I know that was a little bit of shooting back and forth, but to get back to our guests that are on, if Eric, Randy, do you guys have anything that you would add to that, or you know, anything else you want to you know, correct or dispel or whatever the case may be?
Well, my only contribution would be that different counselors work for different people. Finding a connection with the, not only does the counselor have to have, or the site or the physician, whichever, have to have the knowledge, expertise in this particular field, which is not that easy to find, but you also have to have a personal rapport, and a trust must develop. So there, you may go to three or four different psychologists before you find one that you're comfortable with, and that's part of unfortunately part of the process that. Of finding the proper person.
I just want to cut in real quick, and thank you very much for that, Randy. But this is something I think that would you and Eric would appreciate hearing. I'm just getting news now that the Zadroga Act has finally been passed. It's breaking as of 12:20 p.m. that. The reauthorization of the Zadroga Act has finally made it through Congress. The House and Senate had finally easily passed the spending package early Friday morning, and it includes funds to extend the health care of first responders and others suffering from lingering health problems on 9/11 for 75 years. It's also extending the Victim Compensation Fund to help first responders who are too sick to work and their families for 5 years. You know, and again, I don't know what involvement, if any, you guys had in that. Being, I know agencies sent people from all over the place.
I know
myself recently, my brother was diagnosed with a brain tumor that they linked back and went through with surgery, and they held him on the job for 8 months so he could retire at normal pension, and now he's got a suit to get his 9/11 pension. But it's definitely great news, you know, for me personally and my family. But I thought you guys would want to hear. It just came across my ticker.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Absolutely.
It is awesome. But you know what? This thing should have been passed way before this. It shouldn't have taken all the protests and sick and injured cops walking into Washington, D.C., to push Congress to do the thing that they should have done to begin with, and that pisses me off.
Believe me, I agree with you completely. But we all know why that is, because none of them were affected. I assure you, if that plane hit the Capitol and they were all affected with contamination and developing cancers, you know as well as I do, that bill would have been passed. There would have been no deadline on it. There would have been no monetary cap on it whatsoever, and they'd all apply for it, and not one of them would have to do something like what my brother now has to do, where he's got to sue to get accepted into it at his own dime. You know, they would have that all taken care of. But that's always the case. Politicians aren't affected. They don't give a fuck, let's face it. It is what it is. And you know what? That's another thing, too. That's probably why there's no actual federal legislature into, you know, emergency services and first responders and post-traumatic stress disorder, and very little work in regards to post-traumatic stress disorder and military members. Because let's face it, how many members on Capitol Hill, no matter what party you're affiliated with, are involved in the military anymore? very few. The days of military service and going into politics seems to be gone. Now everyone's a fucking attorney.
True. True story.
You know, it is what it is. But you know what? Maybe somehow we can put in enough pressure and get something done with that. Yeah, or at least I know we and Lesma, we're trying, but we'll see what happens with it. So we don't really have a terrible amount of time left to go. But we answered some calls from some people who really wanted to speak to you guys, and I appreciate your time and your patience. I know you guys have a lot to do, and you have your own jobs and families, and you know you're waking up very early in the morning, some of you, and I do greatly appreciate it. But I do want to give each of you a chance to talk about what it is that you're doing and plug your own sites, your own books, and your own acts and whatnot. So if you don't mind, I'd like to cut away some time for that and say, Randy. You know, I know you mentioned your recent book. Why don't we go first with you, and you can tell everyone about that book, and then you know how they can get it and how they could follow you and whatnot.
Sure, of course. Well, you know, I've been writing since the early 2000s. I have three books on law enforcement. My first one was called True Blue: Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, and I actually produced that book. My own stories and stories from cops from all over the country for the families of the officers who were killed in 9/11. I donated every penny of the royalties to the Widows and Orphans Fund for the Port Authority and New York City police officers. So that was my first book. That's available on all my books are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. My second book was called The Cop's Life, and that's the one that's received quite a bit of attention from some police academies use that in just the way that Ed was talking about, showing how policing can change you and change your personality. My third book was True Blue: To Protect and Serve, another compilation. And my fourth one, which came out earlier this year, is a little bit different. It's called The Power of Legacy: Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I went around the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives about who their personal heroes were, who it was that inspired them to do the things that they did. And I have people in there like Frank Shankwitz, who was the man who created the Make-A-Wish Foundation when he was an Arizona State Trooper. We have Gary Sinise gave me a story. Bill O'Reilly gave me a story. And I have a lot of people whose names you never heard, but whose deeds have really touched the lives of millions around the globe. So that was my fourth book, and I do a lot of writing for PoliceOne.com, Police Magazine, Law Officer Magazine, and I'm a commentator for Fox and Friends and other outlets. I welcome any of your listeners to come join me at Facebook under Randy Sutton News Personality, and I have a great deal of content on there, and my new website will be up very shortly, just under randyalsutton.com.
Thank you very much, Randy. And Eric, now for you, I know when I released my video on this, I told everybody, on this program, I told them they have to, if it's the last thing they do, they have to see one of your shows, that you're absolutely hysterical, and you are. And I want to give you a chance to plug that and maybe even plug some shows you're doing or any big shows you have, because obviously our members are from all over the nation. So if you have anything that's pretty big scheduled as of yet, now's a good time to pass it out there. But also please keep in mind, if anything does come up down the road that's not yet scheduled, please let me or Amanda know, because I would love to plug it on the page for you. So why don't you take a few minutes and, get your info out there.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Let me just say this. Before I plug anything for me, thank you very much for doing the show. It's a great thing to be putting this out there and getting the word out there. to anybody who's listening to it now live or maybe be able to listen to it later recorded. There's so much information needs to be put out there. Besides Randy's books, let me give you a list of books that you might want to people who are listening might want to check out. First of all, obviously Kevin Gilmartin's book, The Emotional Survival for Law Enforcement. I have all these copies sitting right in front of me, so I'm looking at them because these are all books I've read and they're on my bookshelf. For families, I Love a Cop by Ellen Kirschman. What police families need to know is an excellent book for loved ones of law enforcement to read. Even the police officer should read it, but the loved ones for law enforcement. Another one that goes along with the families is Cops Don't Cry, a book of help and hope for police families. Is a very good book written by Valley Stone. Very good book for families to read. And then just one that I think will help people who are suffering maybe a little bit from PTSD. And when we have PTSD, we also sort of suffer from anxiety and panic attacks and stuff. And I know that I suffered tremendously from them is a book called Anxiety, Phobia, and Panic. And it's written by Renee Purifoy. And I'll just spell her last name, Purifoy. It's a great book to read to help you understand, you know, those heart palpitations and those absolute tunnel vision moments where you're getting to those anxiety and those panic attacks and you don't know why, and it's all brought on by this traumatic stress that some of us feel and some of us have. So it's a very good book to help you recognize that and to help you deal with those moments where you need to get out of that panic attack and that anxiety that you're feeling. So, you know, they're just some books that I would suggest that people read. As far as me, you can go to ericpotts.com. I have my whole comedy schedule. We're getting ready to do a tour of the Southwest coming up in March and April. As a matter of fact, one of the dates that we may be adding here soon is in Vegas. So, Randy, please come out and see us when we're out there. We have me and Kevin Downey Jr. We're doing a tour. So we're going to be doing Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, we'll hit Oklahoma on our way back, and Ohio. We got a whole bunch of places we're going, but locally.
I'd love to be there. Love to be there.
Yeah, I'm not even sure which hotel we're going to be in yet. We're still working on it, but and then from now, I'm local, doing local shows. So just go to ericpotts.com, and you can find me locally, and you know, New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, Delaware area, until we do that tour. But that's basically really what I want to do is have these people check out these books and get the help they need. That's it.
I definitely appreciate that. And let me tell you something. You get those dates together. Amanda's in Oklahoma. I'm sure she's going to stop out to see you. And you'll definitely see me when you're in Vegas. I'll make a mission of that. I love going to Vegas, and I'd love to be at the show there and possibly run into Randy. And then maybe when the show's over, we can all cause our own little chaos. that being said, listen, guys, you have no idea how appreciative I am, you know, joining in on the show. You know, I know you guys have a lot of personal feelings about this and, you know, what it is that made you so passionate about it. You know, as do I, and I really do appreciate you spending the time, you know, to be with us on the air, you know, as a new group that's trying to get things done, to spend the time with us is not anything I myself or any of the board members for our corporation or the admins in the Facebook group are going to forget anytime soon. And if there's anything we can do for either one of the two of you, you know, we love you guys deeply. You know, please, by all means, whether it's promoting something you're doing or just something you want to post or whatever, by all means, feel free. We'd love to have you.
Well, thanks,
I appreciate that. I appreciate that as well.
I need to jump in.
Andy's chiming in, so we have to listen.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I did get a question in private message, and I wanted to hit it really quick because I think it's pretty important that if you guys have an answer, that we give her an answer. She wants to know how confidentiality works with seeking help. If she knows someone suffering from PTSD and they use the excuse of seeking help could affect their job, which is somehow related to this line of work, is it going to affect, and if so, what kind of effect will it have?
Well, I would say that this is a hard thing to say because a lot of times it depends on the circumstances and it depends on the organization. Some organizations absolutely have employee assistant programs out there. Employee assistant programs are confidential. People go to those, and nobody's any wiser of what's going on. If you don't have that in place, you obviously have to seek help on the outside if you're not going to seek it on the inside. But if the department somehow becomes aware of somebody suffering from this incident, my thought is that the department should be sympathetic and should offer as much help as they can. That's not always the case. Let's be realistic here. There are some archaic thinking out there that still exists, where somebody in a position of power is going to go, this guy's weak and this person's weak, and it may affect their career that way. And it's horrible to say, but I'd rather have my career affected than not have my life in order or be alive any longer. So, you know, you have to look at it that way. Get the help you need. It's the most important thing that you can do. You can deal with the consequences afterwards. I think the majority of police departments today, many of them, are changing the way they are thinking and are dealing with these incidents in a much better way, and it won't affect in the long term somebody's career or advancement. It may affect them in the short term because they want to make sure this person is stable, and I understand that for litigation purposes and for liability purposes, where police departments want to make sure this person is okay to carry a gun and a badge. But it doesn't put a stigma on them for their entire career, and that's what we need to be aware of.
I would only add that that you know most agencies are now finally coming to terms with the realities that that it's not mental illness to suffer from PTSD, and most will cover that type of treatment, but the real story is just as you said, Matt, that it's about getting the help for yourself. That's the important thing. When it really comes down to it, your life and your health is your responsibility. And if there's a certain stigma, you have to fight your way through it. And it's a shame, but most people now accept this PTSD. There's been a lot of talk about it in the news media and in regards to military. It's not as much of a stigma as it used to be.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not. And, you know, a lot of people nowadays look at it, you know, and again, I mean, it's just from what I heard. A lot of people nowadays don't even look at it as really a disorder, but more of a condition. It is trainable. You can program yourself out of it with help. You know, there are a lot of departments that don't frown on it the way it is. What this individual is more than likely, although, you know, no one can guarantee it, they're more than likely fighting the old stigma. You know, it's just like, you know, alcoholism, how it's viewed as a disease now, and you know, people aren't terminated. They're sent for help. You know, random offenses maybe, but they're sent for help, you know, that's what's needed, and that's what you'll find a lot when you go for the help. But there are plenty of sources out there that will give them the help, you know, without alarming anybody. There are places they can go for anonymous help. They can research it online, you know, put it in Google. You'll find it. A lot of times there's fraternal organizations affiliated with different police departments and fire departments that will offer that to them as well. And sometimes they just need the comfort to know it's okay from somebody else. Sometimes for whoever's messaging you, sometimes just reaching out to somebody who's in the same line of work, who understands, is all you need for that individual to make the connection and say, you know what, it's not me. I do need the help. I'm not crazy. I'm going to do it. And that this individual who's perceiving this maybe needs to touch out to a few of their friends. Or, you know, again, worst case scenario, they can reach out to me or reach out in the group here. At least we can talk to the person and let them know they're not alone. We're here for you. We're here with you. And, you know, the reality is if their job wants to take some sort of unfair action against them, you know, with our affiliates and all, you know, we're over 300,000 strong in total. If we got to make some waves and kick some ass, we'll do it. Nobody should suffer, especially long-term or permanent, be scarred or damaged because they went to help themselves. If anything, that's what should be encouraged to get more people help. So worst-case scenario, by all means, reach out to me, 516-972-4458. Send a message or, you know, like I said, feel free to look it up online. You'll find it. There are plenty of anonymous sources. There's plenty of help. And that's about it, I guess. I don't really have anything else to add. I'm sorry it took so long. I guess I got into one of my rambling moods.
Yes, you did.
Well, gee, thanks. no, I do. I have a tendency to do it. But it, you know what? It's because I'm passionate about it, I guess. Or at least that's what I tell myself.
I'll jump in here and say that
yeah,
I appreciate you guys. I appreciate the show myself very, very much. I have seen suffering and not known what to do. I pretty much just kept my distance. I've seen my fair share of bad incidences. And I've always been curious how people, I recognize the symptoms, but I've always been curious what to do and how to help. And I think that this is very important. I think that just talking about it is huge. So I appreciate you guys coming on and doing this with us a whole, whole lot.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Amanda. That's sweet. It's sweet of you to say to them and
You're a part of that, David. I was saying that to you, too.
Well, no, I'm here every day, and I'm not an expert. I'm just somebody who, you know, is trying to, I guess, do the right thing. And watch out for my brothers and sisters, as I know Eric and I know Randy are doing as well.
I think you guys save a lot more lives than you realize. I really do. I think just opening up this dialogue saves a lot of lives. The fact that we can do this anonymously on the radio like this and throw that link out there and let people listen, I think that you guys are making a bigger impact than you realize, all three of you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and I would have to third that. I do appreciate your kind words. Although you don't normally speak so nice to me when we speak on the phone, I do appreciate that you're doing it now and making yourself look so nice to everyone who's listening. Your words are wonderful, but I can truly not in any way, shape, or form, get across to you guys how much it means to have you guys on and to be part of what it is I'm trying to do here. And I thank you so much. And if there is ever anything I can do or I can have my group do, by all means, please don't hesitate, guys.
Pay off mortgages?
You know what? If you want me to start a fund, I'll do it. I have no problem with that. You guys mean more to me than you know. You're great guys, and really, I appreciate all you're doing. A, in helping us by even just coming on, but B, it's tackling something I know you find passion in, but certainly I do. And the fact that you're rallying with me to do this means the world to me. I have no hesitation in saying, you know, I would do anything for you guys, drop anything and run to you guys, take a bullet for you guys. I mean, you guys, as far as I'm concerned, the two of you are like family. I really do appreciate it. You know, I know as cops we do God's work. You know, at least it's the saying we always used to say in the office. But you two are truly, truly doing God's work, and I appreciate and thank you for that. I'm getting yelled at by the mystery woman I don't know. Who's telling me, God damn it, you only have 10 seconds left and shut up. So with that, let me say goodbye to you guys, and I'll allow everyone else a chance to say goodbye.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for showing up today.
Bye, Chuck.
Bye, Chuck. Bye, Chuck.
Bye, Karen. Bye, y'all. Thank you.
about the new Nitto 555 G2 Ultra High Performance Tire? It's the next generation of the 555 you know, but steps up performance on every level. It's got better traction, handling, and wet braking. And if you haven't heard about it yet, you will.
Step up to the all-new Nitto 555 G2. Check it out at nittotire.com.